It's Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. Welcome, I'm your host Mark Levonier, delivering an hour of horror. Later on, we'll hear an episode of The Sealed Book from 1945, but right now it's a broadcast of The Weird Circle. This next episode, The Bride of Death, syndicated in 1944, turned up some interesting information. It turns out that the author, one Joseph Howard Crutcher, might have written the story for The Weird Circle and revived it in verse for Weird Tales magazine in 1952. Crutcher was a talented illustrator and had his work featured in Weird Tales magazine primarily in the year of 1952, and after seeing the verse, I thought you might like to hear it before we get into the full half-hour story. Hear now the verse of The Bride of Death.
Veiled in the blackness of Ebon, far from the heights of heaven, the Bride of Death, upon the witching midnight hour, in a frenzy overwhelming, unleashes her power, sending forth a torrent of cascading cacophony, vibrant, tumultuous, mind-shattering, far from a symphony. Amid crash and roar, her bony fingers command a flood, freezing to the marrow, a mortal's blood. The spell is cast, the mortals caught fast, with a diabolical fury, duet of dissonance, and death's rattling cry reach a crescendo, leaving another body floating where human eyes cannot pry.
And now the broadcast of The Bride of Death on The Weird Circle, a syndicated recording from 1944.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Bride of Death. This is the story of death, of a fearful prophecy fulfilled, of a love that could lead only to madness. The first ingredient was death. The cold, sharp steel bite of a Scottish claymore. In a narrow street in a town near Donaghfert, an old, half-forgotten Highland feud had flared again. Death peers over the shoulders of three young clansmen as a force twice their number beats them back. Stop a moment and see which one he chooses.
Badly outnumbered, my lord. Don't let them force you out. Keep your back against the wall. Watch out! Keep your sword up, Kenneth. We'll beat them off yet, the traitors cut out.
Oh, Kenneth, Kenneth, my lord, you're bleeding.
Ah, death has chosen Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar, oldest son of the noble Scottish house. The shouted encouragements of his servant, Bruce, will not help him now. The tears of his younger brother, Douglas, come too late. Together, these two carry the wounded man into the home of the Dominie. But the services of this holy man will not change the mind of death.
Come, my son. Let us leave the brothers alone. It's the least that we can do at this moment. You've been wounded in the service of your masters.
Oh, it's only a scratch, Dominie. I'd have died for either of them.
Each man must do his own dying. Even Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar. I believe the younger brother called you Bruce. We shall have to tear your sleeve, Bruce, to dress your arm.
I can't believe it, sir. You don't know his lordship. He won't let himself die.
The clansmen who set upon you, were they from Black Donald's castle?
No, they'd be the last to attack us. That feud has long been over. Derek MacDonald's daughter, Lady Margaret, is to marry young Kenneth. We were on the way to the castle for the betrothal feast.
But the brothers have been away from Scotland most of their lives. The Earl of Dunbar and his bride-to-be can't have seen each other since they were children.
Yes, but it was all arranged by their families years ago. He was to meet his bride for the first time. Oh, you don't know how much he counts on this happiness, Dominie.
I think I do, Bruce. Did you hear the words he spoke to us before he lost consciousness?
You wouldn't find that strange if you knew Kenneth, sir. A man of iron will.
There was an uncanny look in his eyes as he said it. Living or dead, he said, he'd seek her out and have her for his own, living or dead.
The dead now? Why, he's...
Yes, Bruce. Your master is dead. The betrothal feast will never see its guest of honor.
Why?
My son, you're trembling.
Suddenly, Dominic, I'm afraid. You didn't know this man. I tell you, it'll take more than death to stop Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar.
Nevertheless, death was the first ingredient. It was in the mind of Lady Margaret as a girl that the fearful prophecy was planted. But even today, neither her father nor her Aunt Mary know it is there. But it was the second ingredient. It was fear.
No, Father. You can't make me do it. I will not marry the Earl of Dunbar. I'll never marry anyone.
Young Kenneth is not just anyone, Margaret.
Please try to understand, Davok. Margaret's high-strung. She's been alone too much. And now this sudden plan of marriage to a man she's never seen...
That none of us have seen.
20 years ago, you and Kenneth Dunbar played together as children. His father, once the feud was over, became my best friend. We have followed closely his career on the continent.
A career of bloodshed and violence. A professional soldier. And now that he's returning to Scotland, you remember some absurd plan of the past to unite his clan and ours. You remember the Dunbar wealth.
Margaret, that's not fair to your father. All of us consider the Earl of Dunbar a fine match for you in many ways.
You've forgotten the stories of his fits of violence, his strange moods, his cruelty and overbearing willpower.
Gossip. Gossip in your overwrought imagination, Margaret. I have never intended to force you into this marriage.
Oh, Father, if you'd only...
I haven't finished, Margaret. I still don't intend to force you into it. The banquet this evening was arranged to, shall I say, bring you young people together. Let it rest at that. But of one thing I am determined. If you reject the Earl of Dunbar, young Kenneth, you shall have no other husband while I live.
Thank you, Father. Thank you.
The guests have already begun to arrive. The guest of honor will be here before sundown. We both have duties to perform, Margaret.
Now that he's gone, come here and sit beside me.
I'm sorry I acted so silly, Aunt Mary. But if you only understood how I feel...
I think I do, dear. You're frightened.
I am. But not of young Kenneth Dunbar. It's grandfather's prophecy, Aunt Mary, that frightens me.
Nonsense. Black Donald may have been eccentric, but he couldn't foretell the future, Margaret.
And then there was the story that he'd made a bargain with death for being rescued from this room. And a prophecy of some kind that no one ever knew about.
And it's this superstitious nonsense that's been frightening you, Margaret?
It isn't nonsense, Aunt Mary. You see, I found the prophecy. It says, the last born of Black Donald's clan shall be the bride of death.
Oh, you poor child. To have been living in the shadow of that fear. And all on account of that crazy old man. The bride of death. Oh, don't look like that, Margaret. I can't imagine anyone more alive than Kenneth. You could hardly call the Earl of Dunbar a spectre bridegroom.
I know, and yet, somehow I'm afraid. I'm terribly afraid.
There we have two ingredients. All we have to do is to mix them. Perhaps woven together in just the right pattern, they might create a dark tapestry of madness. Twilight has fallen over the wildness of the moors, and a soft wind moans through the trees in the garden back of the castle. Lady Margaret has slipped away from her guests.
Forgive me if I do not rise, Lady Margaret. I have traveled far to get here. I'm very tired.
Oh, I'm sorry I was so silly. But it was rather startling. I hadn't seen anyone come into the garden.
I came through the little gate at the far end.
But we never used that. I mean, I didn't know anyone knew of it except myself. It's all overgrown and with the moor beyond.
I remembered it from many years ago. My home once lay across the moor.
But then, why, of course. Oh, I should have seen the resemblance to your father. You're the Earl of Dunbar.
You're surprised, Margaret?
No. Somehow I knew you were my friend. But you're different in a way, Kenneth. Quieter, more gentle than I'd expected.
There is much that can change a man, Margaret. But
You're just as I pictured you, dreamed of you through the years. Lovely, gracious, a warm heart to welcome me home at last.
Perhaps. Don't you think we'd better go in, Kenneth?
Oh, you're shivering, Margaret. Are you cold?
No, no, it isn't that, Kenneth. I just happened to think of something. Perhaps you remember my grandfather.
Black Don? What Highlander doesn't? That might be he coming down the path this moment.
That's my father, Kenneth. Sir Davick MacDonald. I'm afraid he's going to be angry at you for appearing like a ghost out of nowhere.
His anger cannot reach me, Margaret. I'm beyond all human emotion now. Except my love for you. To have found you at last, that's all that's left. I haven't time for words, but you feel it too. I know you do. Nothing can separate us, Margaret. Not even death.
Welcome to Black Donald Castle, my lord. I had almost given you up.
You see, Father, Kenneth slipped in by the back way. I happened to see him here.
I know, Margaret. Your servant told me I'd find you here, Kenneth. The man is strangely frightened.
Bruce has had a trying day, Sir Davick. We both have. I hope you'll excuse us early.
Nonsense, my boy. You'll spend the night here. Now come along. My guests are anxious to meet you. Your fame has preceded you to Cairn Nagasha.
Even so, it has come too late.
What's the matter, Kenneth? You're not well.
You do look a trifle pale, my boy.
It's nothing, Sir Davick. A recent wound. I lost a lot of blood. Margaret, please stay near me. My time is short.
But time is not an ingredient, nor space. One evening may be an eternity, or it may only be a fraction of a fraction when love awaits the tolling of the midnight bell.
Oh, there you are, Davick. I've been looking for you. It's nearly midnight and the guests are expecting a toast to the Earl of Dunbar.
Mary, I don't understand that young man's behavior. All evening he's avoided me.
He's avoided everyone, Davick, except Margaret. I don't think his eyes have left her face all evening.
It's very strange. I have an uncanny feeling he means her harm. Mary, do you think I've made a mistake? My daughter and a man we know nothing of?
I've never seen Margaret look so happy, Davick, and this in spite of the fear she's carried.
Clan or no clan, I've a good mind to put a stop to the whole affair. I've been too hasty. A Highlander for a son, not a pale-faced imitation, no matter how noble his family. Let no one say MacDonald gave his daughter to be the bride of a bloodless ghost of a man.
The bride of death.
Oh, for heaven's sake, pull yourself together, woman. Our friends are staring at you.
Your daughter and the Earl of Dunbar, they're together in the courtyard now.
And what of that, Wallace?
His lordship has ordered his horse. He means to leave. And Sir Davick, he means to take Lady Margaret with him.
What? He avoids me like the plague, then seeks to take my daughter from me without so much as by your leave? Come, Wallace. Get my sword and bring your own as well. It seems the Donalds must once again teach the House of Dunbar its manners.
There he is, Sir Davick. Lady Margaret, too. The servant already mounted. Over there by the gate. See?
Is this the way the Earl of Dunbar repays the hospitality of the Donalds? To steal my daughter like a common thief?
But, Father, let me explain.
I'll brook no more interference of my wishes. Join your aunt and wait for me. And now, sir, what have you to say?
Only that I shall return and take your daughter with me.
By Black Donald, sir! That you'll never do. You and your henchmen shall know the anger of my clan from this day on.
The anger of the Donalds cannot reach me now, Sir Davick, nor any other human being, except your daughter's love. Oh, I must go. Before the final stroke of midnight, I must leave this place.
And it is well you do, young man, if you value your life.
I place no value on that which I no longer have, Sir Davick. Go tomorrow to the great kirk in the town, and you shall understand my meaning.
You are mad. The same madness that claimed your father.
It is not madness that has claimed me, Sir Davick. It is death.
Ingredients have gone into our story but one. The fear in the mind of Lady Margaret is a result of Black Donald's prophecy that the last born of his line would be the bride of death. The fulfillment of this dire foreboding seemed close at hand when her promised bridegroom, Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar, was stabbed to death on the day of his betrothal feast. Had this been known to Margaret, his first appearance before her might have brought madness with it. Instead, it added the ingredient of love. But now, Sir Davick MacDonald, Margaret's father, has added the most potent ingredient of all. His anger at his noble guest's behavior brought forth truth, always a dangerous ingredient. To Black Donald Castle, it has brought terror and the dark suspicion that the specter bridegroom will return to claim his bride.
Lady Mary, is there no change in her condition? She hardly looks alive.
No, Davok. None of your doctors have been able to rouse her. From midnight last and all through the day I've been by her side, here in her bedchamber, she hasn't moved or spoken.
The events of last night have affected her mind, Mary. I wish I'd never heard of the House of Dunbar. If this ghastly story is true...
If, Davok, in your mind you're as sure as I am that we entertained a ghost last night. Else why should Wallace have ridden to town for you this morning?
It's time he returned.
Deep in your heart you know the fear of all of us who love Margaret. I could see it in your eyes when you returned from the courtyard last night to blurt out that awful story before your guests.
It was a mistake, I admit it, Mary. But how was I to know that Margaret had discovered Black Donald's prophecy? How was I to know her horror of being the bride of death?
You should never have promised her to a man we hadn't seen. You knew the reputation of Kenneth Dunbar, a strange, wild Highlander with an iron will that has given him life even in death. And now his threat to take her with him.
Quiet, woman. Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar, shall go back to his grave without her. The Donalds fear no man, living or dead.
Sir Davok!
Wallace, come in quickly. What have you found?
But Lady Margaret, sir, I do not want to frighten her again.
She can neither see nor hear you, Wallace. But you do not need to speak. I can read the answer in your face. We heard the truth from the lips of a dead man last night.
It is true, Sir Davok. His lordship was killed while on his way to the castle. I could not even get near the kirk. Clansmen from the hills of Porton town to view his body as it lies in state.
Hannah. Hush, Margaret. Don't be frightened. No harm shall come to you.
Watch over her well, Mary. It may be that she will awaken soon. I must decide what shall be done. Come, Wallace. We have much to think of.
Kenneth.
Margaret, child. Try to hear me. This evil thing will never reach you. I shall watch over you. Try to forget your fears. Forget all about the Earl of Dunbar.
She has no fear of me, Lady Mary.
You... Oh, no. No, it can't be. How...
I came from the balcony, Lady Mary. Please do not be afraid. Don't move away.
No. No, you shan't have her. Never. I... Oh.
Kenneth. You've come back for me.
Yes, Margaret. As I promised. But the time has not yet come. You are ill. We must wait a little while.
But you will come back for me?
Very soon, my darling. Through the fears of those about you, through the dark prophecies of the past, I'll come. You're not afraid?
My fear was only that you'd left me, Kenneth. There are no words that matter anymore. I only know that I love you, that you're unhappy, that you need me.
We shall be together soon. Come, sleep now, and know that from windswept moors outside your window, I shall be watching over you.
The ingredients of life do not always mix as you expect them to. The poison of fear can often be cleared away by the potency of love. But the clansmen of Lady Margaret had no such protection as they looked upon the powerful ingredient of truth. Within the great stone walls of Black Donald Castle, the terror of the specter bridegroom grew as the days went by. One night, as the wind lashed the rain across the moors and rattled the ancient casements in the great hall, Sir Davick paced uneasily before the fire.
In the name of heaven, Wallace, come away from that window. There's nothing to see. Warm yourself here by the fire.
It's a fearful night, Sir Davok. It's in my mind that the Spectre Bridegroom may be abroad again.
Watching won't keep him away. Nor guards either, for that matter. Did Lady Mary tell you that one of my men saw the black figure climbing down the vines beneath Margaret's window?
Aye, and that he vanished before his very eyes. It's common talk throughout the castle.
They think of nothing else, Wallace. I swear it's like living with people who have lost their minds.
It's Lady Margaret's health that concerns me, Sir Davok. She will not eat. She will talk to no one. She spends her days and half her nights watching from a window overlooking the garden.
You waste your breath telling me these things, Wallace. I know what's in your mind only too well. You think my daughter is mad, that she has come to think of herself as the bride of death.
I do, Sir Davok. As well as I love the Lady Margaret, I've seen the light in her eyes. It isn't fear, I swear. The lass is waiting for this dead man, this Earl of Dunbar, to return.
Wallace, you're one of my most faithful henchmen, but you're as bad as the rest. This talk is driving me daft. Go back to your window if you must, but hold your tongue.
Davok! Davok!
What is it, Mary? Is Margaret all right?
She's gone, Davok. Vanished. Her room is empty.
I thought I told you to lock her in at night.
A few minutes ago, she called for me and asked for a glass of water. I left the door unlocked to fetch it, and when I came back, she was no longer there. The Spectre Bridegroom has come for her.
Quiet, woman. She's not well. She may have wandered alone out into the storm. Wallace, call out the guard and have horses saddled for all. We'll search every crag, every inch of the moor, every road until my daughter is found. I'll have her back, though I feel the dead hands of Kenneth Dunbar at my throat. Hold, Wallace! Look yonder! You see that faint light glimmering through the rain?
It's from some house, Sir Davok. Come, the men have already turned off. We must hurry.
No, Wallace. That's no house. I wonder I didn't think of it before. It is there that we shall find Lady Margaret. I pray we're still in time.
I think we're in the neighborhood of Dunbar Castle, Sir Davok, but not near enough to see a light.
True, but we're close upon the ancient chapel of the family built centuries ago.
That gloomy place has been sealed as long as I can remember. No one's been near for years.
You're mistaken. Within the week, the place has been occupied. You forget that Kenneth, Earl of Dunbar, was buried there. Come, Wallace. Wallace, hurry. I see the chapel door stands ajar.
This is not to my liking, Sir Davok. If I could get them
there. There's no time for that, you fool. Quickly now.
Look. Up front near the altar. Lady Margaret and the dead man.
And the dominie from the town kirk stands before them. His lips are moving. Perhaps he prays.
All the prayers in Scotland will not bring life to that bloodless youth.
We must stop this sacrilege. Follow close. Dominie, hold your blessing. You do not know the revolting blasphemy you commit.
You're too late, Father. We fear your anger no longer. There's nothing you can do to separate us now.
Margaret, if you think O'Donnell will stand by to see his daughter snatched from him by the hand of death...
MacDonald, please. In the name of the friendship you once bore my father...
There was no bargain that my daughter should be your...
But,
your bride in death.
Sir Davok, the night of the feast I was suffering in mind and body... I could not speak the news I bore.
You lie. At midnight, from your own bloodless lips, I heard...
Your unjust accusation drove me to it. Although I have loved Margaret from the beginning of memory, I was ready to say farewell.
Gentlemen, this is no place to fight with words or swords. If Sir Davok objects to this marriage...
Objects? Dominie, this man is dead. The Earl of Dunbar has sold his soul to the devil to come back from the grave.
Davok MacDonald, Earl of Dunbar, sleeps peacefully in the vault below us. His younger brother, Douglas, has just been joined in wedlock to your daughter.
What? Douglas? Douglas Dunbar?
I don't condone the false impression given you by the present Earl, nor do I condone the secret wooing of your daughter. But of his love, there is no doubt.
And I love him, Father. Even before I knew he wasn't Kenneth, I loved him. Nothing mattered. Even Black Donald's prophecy.
Douglas de la Morte.
That title given by the Normans to the second sons of the House of Dunbar, has long been forgotten, Sir Davok. I ask your forgiveness for playing the role again.
I could not withhold it if I would. All this had to be, my son. Douglas de la Morte. Douglas of Death. Margaret was foreordained by Black Donald himself to be your bride. The Bride of Death.
Sometimes the ingredients of life seem to brew a dark and terrible potion. And yet there's always one final ingredient that's always there. Call it what you will. Luck, chance, fate. It is always there.
Of the past, we have heard another immortal tale in The Weird Circle. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
The Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from in and about the year 1944. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now we wrap up this hour with a story on the sealed book called Death Spins the Web. This episode first aired on April 1st, 1945, from the Mutual Broadcasting System.
That sealed book.
Once again, the keeper of the book is ready to open the ponderous volume in which is recorded all the secrets and mysteries of mankind through the ages. All the strange and mystifying stories of the past, the present, and the future. Keeper of the book, what tale will you tell us this time?
What tale shall I tell you? I have here tales of every kind. Tales of murder, of madness, of dark deeds and events strange beyond all belief. Yes, here's a tale for you. A strange tale of an old woman and of three heirs greedy for her millions. A tale I call Death Spins a Web. And here is the tale as it is written in the sealed book. In a great mansion far from the city, Mrs. Oliver Drake lies dying. Her door opens, and her attorney, Henry Arnold, enters.
Good morning, Mrs. Drake. How do you feel today?
Henry, 2 days ago, Dr. Smith told me I had 2 months to live. Well, that's how I feel, like somebody who has 2 months to live.
You take it well, Mrs. Drake.
Tell me. Have those three worthless grandchildren gotten here yet?
Blanche and Vivian have. They're outside in the hall now. But you want to see them?
I don't want to see them, no. But I will. We have things to talk over.
Of course. I'll send them in. Your grandmother will see you now.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Oh, Granny, darling, it's so nice to see you again. Why, you don't look sick at all.
Mm-mm, that must be quite a disappointment to you, Vivian.
Dear Granny, it's so good to see you again. How are you, darling?
Dr. Smith says I may live for another 10 years. Now, Blanche, you mustn't look so downcast. Perhaps I can arrange to die sooner.
Why, Granny, you know I didn't mean any...
Hello, Granny. Sorry I'm late.
Ah, our family playboy has arrived. Chris, these are your cousins. Blanche and Vivian.
Well, I'm very happy to meet both of you.
Strange, Chris, that we've never met before. We've been to so many of the same places. Monte Carlo, Paris, Deauville.
I'm sorry that we didn't, Blanche. Until now, I had no idea that I had such a beautiful cousin.
Chris, I'm Vivian, one of your unknown polo admirers.
I saw you play at Bentonhurst last year. You were magnificent.
Chris is magnificent at everything that's a waste of time. By the way, Chris, whatever became of that princess you were married to?
Oh, you mean Irina? We were divorced 2 months ago, Granny.
Congratulations. What about you, Blanche?
Hmm?
Are you still married to that third husband of yours?
Oh, no, Granny. I got rid of him a year ago.
What about you, Vivian?
I'm free at the moment, darling.
You know, if I were to search the entire world for the three most useless people, I don't think I could do better than you three.
As far as I'm concerned, you're undoubtedly right, darling.
If I had my way, I'd cut you three vultures off without a penny and leave everything to charity. Unfortunately, under your grandfather's will, I have to divide the fortune among the three of you. But I'm permitted to divide it any way I see fit.
But of course you're going to divide the money equally between us, aren't you, Granny?
No, dear, that's just it. I'm not.
What?
I'm going to leave the fortune to just one of you. The other two will merely receive token inheritances.
But why, Granny?
I feel that one of you must be just a shade less useless to society than the other two. And to that one, I intend to bequeath a fortune.
I see. And have you made up your mind yet?
No.
Ah?
I want the three of you to live with me for a few weeks so that I can become better acquainted with each of you. And at the end of that time, I shall make my decision.
In the days that followed, Blanche, Vivian, and Chris spent a good deal of time with their grandmother. Mrs. Drake preferred to see them separately, and often, after one of the three had left her bedroom, there was a gleam of amusement in her eye, as though she were enjoying a private joke. Chris, meanwhile, working on a plan of his own, also saw a lot of his beautiful cousins separately.
Oh, Chris, isn't it beautiful out here?
You're very beautiful, Blanche. As beautiful as the night itself.
You don't have to say that, Chris, just because there's a full moon.
It's not the moon. Darling, life hasn't been the same since I met you. The moment our eyes met, I was lost.
Oh, Chris. Chris, I felt the same way. Only I didn't think you did.
But I do, darling.
Then you're going riding with Vivian each morning doesn't mean anything?
Oh, of course not. You're the one I love and always will.
Oh, Chris. Chris, I do so want to believe you. I've been so unhappy. None of my husbands ever understood me.
But I do, darling. And I love you very much.
Oh. Oh.
You know that now, don't you?
Yes, Chris. Yes. I do.
Oh, Chris, it's a wonderful morning. Oh, the air feels so clean.
Oh, you look lovely, Vivian, with your cheeks so flushed and your hair windblown. Look at me, Vivian.
Oh, Chris. Chris, don't.
Yeah.
You had no right to kiss me. Let me go.
Your lips say let me go, but that isn't what your eyes are saying, is it, darling?
No, Chris. No, it's not. Oh, Chris, this isn't just one of your famous flirtations.
No, darling. I think I fell in love with you the moment I saw you. You do care for me, don't you, Vivian?
Yes, Chris. Yes, I do.
Understand you want to see me, Granny.
Yes. Come over here, Chris. Well, how did you make out?
What do you mean?
I said, how did you make out? With Vivian, of course.
So you know that I was out riding with Vivian.
I know everything that goes on in this house. Vivian may not know that you took Blanche for a walk down by the lake last night, but I know.
Oh, now, Granny, you're not going to give my little game away, are you?
Oh, no, Chris, no. I find it very enjoyable watching an unmitigated scoundrel make love to two women at the same time.
Well, after all, Granny, if you don't leave me the fortune, I have no choice but to marry whichever one of them inherits it.
But they're such stupid women, Chris. You yourself are a rogue, but at least an amusing one. But those women...
And that's the reason you ought to leave me the fortune, Granny.
The pity I'm not 20 years younger, isn't it, Chris? Then your charm might have some effect upon me.
Yes, you're quite right.
Well, Chris, you'd better get back to Blanche and Vivian. After all, one of them might be an heiress. And heiresses demand attention.
A week passed. A week in which Kraus Chris found it more and more difficult to play his little game. Blanche and Vivian stopped speaking to each other, and it became steadily harder for him to convince each of them that he had no interest in the other.
Good morning, darling.
Oh, hello, Blanche.
Well, aren't you even going to kiss me?
Of course, dear.
Chris, I do love you so. This past week has been heavenly. Chris, you do love me, don't you?
Darling, what a question. You know there couldn't be anyone for me but you.
Then why do you spend so much time with Vivian?
That's how I keep tabs on her.
What do you mean?
Blanche, Vivian is cheating in an effort to get Granny's fortune.
Cheating? How?
The three of us agreed not to go see Granny unless she sent for us.
Yes?
Well, Vivian has already broken that agreement. Several times she sneaked into Granny's bedroom to try to influence the old lady in her favor.
What? Why, that dirty double-crossing, two-timing... Chris, do you think Vivian's getting anywhere?
Well, when Granny sent for me last night, she more or less hinted that it would be Vivian who would inherit the fortune.
But... Chris, how can you take it so calmly? We've got to do something.
Please, darling, let me handle this.
But we...
I have a plan to take care of Vivian, and to take care of her very effectively. Hello, Vivian. How are you, darling?
Let go of me, Chris. Let go.
But what's wrong, darling?
Aren't you afraid Blanche may be wondering where you are?
Oh, so that's it.
Yes, that's it.
Vivian, listen to me. Whatever time I've spent with Blanche hasn't been because I wanted to. All I've been doing is protecting our interests.
Protecting our interests?
You may not know it, but Blanche has broken the agreement the three of us had. She's been sneaking in to see Granny behind our backs.
Why, that low-down, conniving, peroxide blonde.
That's the reason I've spent so much time with Blanche. Learn if Granny is being influenced by her.
And is she, Chris?
Mm-hmm. Blanche seems to feel certain she's going to inherit the fortune.
Oh, Chris, what are we going to do?
You can do as you please. After I've spent days with that hag trying to protect our interests and ensure our future happiness, you accuse me of making love to her.
I didn't say that.
Well, you intimated as much.
Oh, please, Chris, don't be angry. I'm terribly sorry I lost my temper. Oh, please say you forgive me, darling. Please. I'll never doubt you again.
A few days later, after a particularly severe heart attack, Mrs. Drake sent for her three grandchildren.
I suppose you're wondering why I sent for you, aren't you?
Naturally. Well,
frankly, yes, Granny, darling.
In the 2 weeks that you've been living with me, I've come to the conclusion that you three are the shallowest and most useless people alive.
Why, Granny?
If I could, I'd leave the entire fortune to charity. But the will of your grandfather provides that the fortune is to be divided among you. I want you to know that I've finally made my choice.
You have?
And who's the lucky one among us, Granny?
My attorney, Mr. Arnold, is coming from the city the day after tomorrow to draw up my will. When I'm dead, he'll reveal to you who the fortune goes to. Until then, you'll just have to be patient and try to guess.
For several days, Blanche and Vivian and Chris have waited in suspense to learn their grandmother's decision as to who is to inherit her money. Then one morning, looking very upset, Chris seeks out his cousin Blanche.
Blanche.
Chris, what is it? Is anything wrong?
Everything's wrong.
What is it? Chris, tell me.
Early this morning, Granny sent for me. I managed to wheedle out of her who the fortune is going to.
You did? Oh, Chris, who's going to get it?
Vivian.
Vivian?
Yes. We're each to receive $5,000 while she gets millions.
Oh, Chris. Chris, it's not fair.
Oh, shh. Don't cry, darling. I could stand the thought of losing the fortune. If it weren't that, I'd lose you also.
Chris, what are you saying? We'll always be together.
Oh, darling, there's no use pretending. If we're both penniless, we can't get married.
Oh, Chris, it wouldn't matter if we were penniless. Really, it wouldn't.
That's what you say now, Blanche, but I know better.
Oh, no.
Both of us are too used to luxury to do without it. And listen, if somehow Vivian failed to inherit the fortune, it would mean that either you or I would be bound to. In either case, we could get married and have our chance for happiness.
Yes, you're right. Oh, I hate her. I hate her.
Darling, if we want our happiness, we've got to fight for it.
Chris, what are you talking about?
If something were to happen to Vivian, our worries would be over.
Chris, you don't mean... Oh, no.
Darling, the happiness of two people is more important than that of one. And we could be so happy together. I can't bear the thought of giving you up.
Oh, Chris. But murder, we'll be caught.
Not if we're clever, darling. Now listen. This afternoon, suggest to Vivian that the two of you take the canoe and paddle to the other end of the lake. When you get about a mile from shore, you'll see me approaching in the motorboat. That will be the moment for you to tip the canoe over.
Tip the canoe over?
Yes. Then I'll pick you up and bring you back to the dock. As for Vivian, it was a simple case of drowning. By the time I reached the overturned canoe, she had gone under. You were the only survivor.
Oh, Chris, I'm so frightened.
Well, will you do it?
Yes. I'll do it. If you want me to.
Are you tired paddling, Blanche?
No, Vivian. Oh, the lake is certainly deserted today, isn't it?
It always is this time of the year. Oh, but that water's cold.
Yeah. I hear a motorboat.
Oh, look, it's Chris. He's coming after us.
Hello, you two. Who wants a lift?
Let's just ignore him, Vivian.
All right. We'll pretend he isn't there. He expects us to admit we're tired.
Shall we change places? I'm tired of paddling in the stern.
All right, if you like. But be careful. These canoes tip very easily.
Yes, I know. Now, you work your way slowly toward the stern while I make for the bow.
Okay.
Now, we have to slide past each other. This is a tricky part, changing places in a canoe.
Blanche, look out. You're rocking the canoe.
Oh, I can't help it.
Look out. We're going over.
Hey, what happened to you two?
Chris. Chris, pick me up.
Come over here and I'll help you into the boat.
Chris. Where are you?
Here I am, Vivian.
Chris, it's 30 yards to the boat. I can't swim that far.
Chris, get me up. My clothes are dragging me under.
Where's the boat? I'll pick you up.
Oh, Chris, don't let me drown. Chris. Chris.
It's only another 20 yards, Blanche.
Oh, Chris, my clothes, they're so heavy. I'm getting so tired.
Just a few more yards, darling.
A few more yards. I couldn't swim beyond that if my life depended on it.
I'm afraid you may have to, darling.
Chris! Chris, come back! Chris, don't let me drown! Chris! Chris, don't!
Hello, Granny. How are you?
Have the police left yet?
Yes, Granny. They asked me to convey their condolences over the tragic loss of your granddaughters. Oh, it was just one of those unfortunate accidents.
Yes, wasn't it? It's a pity you weren't able to get there in time to save them, Chris.
I shall never forgive myself for that, Granny.
I'm sure you won't. Well, Mr. Arnold is waiting to see me about drawing up my will and naming my heir. But I no longer seem to have a choice in the matter. I must give you credit, Chris. You worked the whole thing out like a master.
Why, Granny,
Whatever are you talking about?
You may have fooled Blanche and Vivian and the police to boot, but not me, Chris.
What do you mean?
Chris, you remember when the thought first occurred to you that with Blanche and Vivian gone, you would inherit all?
Why, Granny.
It was when you met your cousins for the first time in this room. The thought occurred to you because I said, it's a pity there isn't only one of you. Then I wouldn't have to bother deciding who should inherit the fortune.
Come to think of it, I do recall your saying something to that effect.
And when I did, your head came up and you stared at the two women, and then you smiled. And I knew exactly what you were going to do.
Of course, this is all nonsense, but if you say you knew what I was going to do, why didn't you stop me?
Because I wanted to see happen what did happen.
But if you wanted me to inherit the fortune, why didn't you promise to leave it to me in your will without...
Without forcing you to do what you did?
Yes.
My dear Chris, for reasons of my own, I wanted it to be quite impossible for those two vicious, stupid women to inherit my money. And equally impossible for you.
Well, whether you want me to inherit the fortune or not, I'm going to.
Oh, are you?
Yes. Under Grandfather's will, there's no way you can prevent me from inheriting it. It's mine, come what may.
Oh, is it?
Yes. What are you laughing at?
You fool. There isn't any fortune.
What are you saying? There are millions.
There's nothing. Absolutely nothing. Everything your grandfather left was lost in the Depression.
No, that can't be. You're lying.
Lying, am I? I've been paying the servants my doctor bills and other expenses by selling what few pieces of jewelry I had left. I have nothing now. Nothing.
No.
In fact, I shouldn't even be surprised if you had to pay my funeral expenses.
You witch! You planned this all from beginning to end, getting the three of us here. Speaking of leaving the fortune to one of us, driving me on to drown the two of them.
Yes, that's right. And I can't recall ever having had so much fun in all my life.
Well, you won't be having it much longer. You made a mistake in playing me for the fool.
I don't think so. You did exactly as I knew you would. Everything I expected came about.
It did it? Did you expect this also? You didn't expect this, did you? Well, why don't you laugh now? You'll never play anybody else for a fool.
Drake, anything wrong? I thought I heard... Good heavens, Mr. Drake, let go of her! Let go, dear, here! Let go!
Thing she didn't count on.
Let go of her!
There. You can have her. She'll never play another little game like that.
Mrs. Drake. Mrs. Drake. She's dead.
No more than she deserved.
Chris, what did you do it for? Murdering a helpless old woman. It's madness.
Helpless, was she? Why, she tricked me into believing she had a fortune. Tricked me into killing to get it.
What are you talking about? She tricked you into believing she had a fortune. She does have a fortune.
You're lying. She said there wasn't a cent of the fortune left.
You must have misunderstood her. She's worth at least $8 million. And with the death of your cousins, you were the sole heir to it.
$8 million?
But, Chris, no matter what you do now, that fortune can never be yours. I saw you kill your grandmother. And under the law, no murderer can inherit anything from his victim.
She planned this, too. She always said she didn't want me to have her money. And she fixed it way so it would all go to charity. But I'll show her. I'll show her. It's mine, you hear? Mine, mine, mine!
So in the end, old Mrs. Drake defeated her three greedy grandchildren after all. But what a strange way to disinherit anybody. It looks as if murder ran in the family, doesn't it? But the sound of the great gong tells me it's time to close the sealed book again.
One moment, keeper of the book. What story will you tell us next time?
Next time? Would you prefer a murder or a tale of the supernatural? Remember, I have all the stories that ever happened here, and all that have yet to come to pass. But I'll find one for you in just a moment.
Keeper of the book. Have you found the tale you'll tell next time?
Yes, yes, I've found one. It's the story about a girl who goes to live on an island, a very strange island, where the dead walk by night and weird voices sound in the wind. I call the story Devil Island.
Be sure to be with us again next time. The sound of the great gong heralds another strange and exciting story from...
The Sealed Book.
The Sealed Book, written by Bob Arthur and David Cogan, is produced and directed by Jock McGregor.
The Sealed Book, on Tuned to Yesterday from April 1st, 1945, on Mutual Radio. And that brings to a close this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Special thanks to Jeff Windsor for the reading of The Bride of Death earlier in the hour. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.